The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the July-August issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to begin today on page 8, Who's Who in Sports, and we're going to go to line 2. And we're going to start with Emily Sterling, Maryland Terrapins goalie. Her height is 5'5". She was born January 27, 2001, and her hometown is Bel Air, Maryland. Sterling was named First Team All-American by USA Lacrosse magazine following a season in which she helped the Terrapins to the national semifinals. Her goals against average of 7.87 was second in the country. Sterling was named the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week 5 times as Maryland finished the season with a 19-2 record. Did you know Maryland has won 14 women's lacrosse national championships, twice as many as any other school? Next we have Joe Burrow, Cincinnati Bengals quarterback. His height is 6'4", his weight is 221 pounds. He was born December 10, 1996 in his hometown, Ames, Iowa. In his second NFL season, Burrow led the Bengals to Super Bowl 56, which they narrowly lost to the Rams. He threw for 4,611 yards and 34 touchdowns and was named Comeback Player of the Year following his recovery from a knee injury that ended his rookie season after 10 games. Burrow won the Heisman Trophy in 2019 at LSU. But did you know the Bengals are now 0-3 in the Super Bowl? The only teams with a worse record are the Vikings and Bills, both of whom are 0-4 in the big game. And finally, we have Scottie Scheffler, PGA Tour player. His height is 6'3", his weight is 200 pounds. He was born June 21, 1996, in his hometown, Ridgewood, New Jersey. By winning 3 tournaments in February and March, Scheffler took over the world number one ranking, which he still holds. In April, he won his first major with a 3-stroke victory at the Masters, his 4th straight top 10 finish in a major. In 2017, Scheffler, who played collegiately at Texas, was a low amateur in the United States Open. Did you know the largest margin of victory at the Masters is 12 strokes set by Tiger Woods? He was 18 under par in the 1997 tournament. Now we're going to continue with the Hall of Cool class of 2022. The knuckleball. Professional sports are so stuck in their ways. Sometimes it pays to play the game just plain wrong. In an era when spin rate has become synonymous with pitch quality, let's appreciate the hurlers who won games by taking spin off the ball. The physics of the pitch are cool. The ball surrenders to the flow of the air around it. The total lack of strategy is cool. You know what's coming? So hit it. And the pitchers who log massive inning totals well into their 40s are incredibly cool. Really, the only uncool thing about the knuckleball is its apparent extinction. Only one pitcher has thrown it in the past 3 seasons. Diego Maradona. No one has ever been more dazzling with a ball at their feet than Diego Maradona. Against England at the 1986 World Cup, he scored a controversial goal that appeared to go in off his fist. He later said it was scored a little with the head of Maradona and a little with the hand of God. 4 minutes later, he went on a 60-yard mad dash that saw him dribble past 4 England players, leave the goalkeeper on the seat of his pants, and stroke the ball into an empty net. In 2002, it was named Goal of the Century by FIFA. Joe Namath. When he was out injured for a game in November 1971, Jets quarterback Joe Namath dazzled onlookers by wearing stylish pants under a fur coat. A few years earlier, he was the center of attention prior to Super Bowl III in Miami as he held court poolside. In short, Joe cool no matter the weather. He was cool, and his play was as impressive as his sense of style. Before the Super Bowl, he guaranteed his Jets would defeat the Baltimore Colts, who were expected to thrash New York. Joe Cool came through. The Jets won 16-7. Satchel Paige. He had a full career in the Negro Leagues before baseball integrated. Still, Satchel Paige had plenty to show Major League Baseball when he joined Cleveland in 1948 at age 41. Age is a question of mind over matter. He famously said, "If you don't mind, it doesn't matter." Paige had many such explanations for his greatness. Throw strikes, home plate don't move, and his disputed age? The GOAT ate the Bible with the birth certificate in it. He's arguably the best pitcher to ever do it and indisputably the funniest. Greg Popovich. Okay, he can be a little grumpy, maybe a lot grumpy, but it's partly because the Spurs coach cares only about things he feels are worth caring about. So Greg Popovich often uses his platform in press conferences to talk about pressing social issues. He's an excellent teacher, he's fiercely loyal, and he gets results. His San Antonio teams have won 5 NBA titles and made the playoffs 22 straight years. If that's not cool enough, Pop speaks fluent Russian, went to spy school when he was in the Air Force, and worked for a while in the military intelligence. The 99ers. You may be good, but are you permanently changed the sports culture of your country good? The 1999 Women's World Cup presented the perfect opportunity to promote soccer in the United States. The American team was its best ever in playing at home. That created pressure for the 99ers to win. They did, in the most dramatic fashion possible, beating China on penalty kicks. Thanks to their example, the USWNT still dominates in the way usually reserved for sports we invented. NFL Blitz shows a picture of number 10. There will never be another sports video game like the original NFL Blitz, literally. First released as an arcade cabinet in 1997, this spiritual sequel to NBA Jam presented a cartoonish version of football full of long bombs and bone-crunching hits. EA released a remake in 2012, but the NFL made it take out the nonstop gratuitous late hits, basically the whole point of the game. The Famous Chicken. Before the Famous Chicken came along, if a fuzzy creature wanted to see a sporting event, it would have to watch on TV. But the fowl, played by Ted Gianolis, started appearing at Padres games in 1974, making stadiums and arenas safe for the likes of the Suns Gorilla and Gritty. At the peak of his popularity, the chicken graced baseball cards and appeared with presidents. A mainstay at minor league parks, the chicken made more than 5,000 appearances in all 50 states. Inside the NBA, so here we have a picture here of Magic Johnson, Ernie, Kenny the Jet Smith, and Charles Barkley. Inside the NBA, for most televised sporting events, halftime is when you run to the kitchen for a snack. For NBA games on TNT, though, it's when the fun starts. The Inside the NBA crew up above from left, Shaquille O'Neal. That's right, excuse me, not Magic Johnson. Shaquille O'Neal, Ernie Johnson, Kenny Smith, and Charles Barkley breaks down the game with mix of jokes, irreverence, and physical comedy. And that's only if they feel like talking about the game. They'll riff on their careers, playfully diss each other, or tackle serious non-basketball topics. No matter what, they're must-see TV. Deion Sanders. Primetime was one of the flashiest athletes of his era, but his wasn't case of style over substance. Deion Sanders is the only player to appear in a World Series and a Super Bowl. In 1992 with the Braves, he led the majors in triples, 14, and was an all-pro cornerback with the Falcons. That October, he suited up for an NFL game and a baseball playoff game on the same day. He's since taken over as coach at Jackson State, where he's working to increase the visibility of football at historically black colleges and universities. Powder blue jerseys. For decades, major league teams mostly followed a simple, boring formula when it came to uniforms. They'd wear white at home and gray on the road. Then in the early 1970s, as color television became more popular, teams began replacing their drab grays with a more vibrant hue, powder blue, even if it wasn't one of the team's traditional colors. By 1980, 10 teams had embraced the fad. Then baby blues fell out of favor as teams returned to more traditional duds. But thankfully, they're making a comeback, thanks to teams like the Phillies. Current members of the class of cool 2020, Marshawn Lynch, Chloe Kim, Megan Rapinoe, LeBron James, Tony Hawk, Simone Biles, Ichiro, Ken Griffey Jr., T-Shirt Cannon, Doris Burke, James Harden's beard seems to be crossed out here, Miami Heat Vice jerseys, Will Sports, Hank the Dog, Seafood on the Ice, The Stanford Tree. 2021. The cool list includes Michael Jordan, Inside the Park Home Runs, Yaromo Yager, Becky Hammon, Throwback Jerseys, Nachos. Now, what if there were no career-ending injuries? Page 22. It's the ultimate. What if the career abruptly ended by injury? So on these next four pages, we're going to cover most of the big ones. Projecting hypothetically healthy careers, however, is a tricky business. After all, don't injuries end all careers, in a sense? Even the athletes who last well into their 40s are eventually felled by the breakdowns of their bodies. So rather than estimate of how many home runs Babe Ruth would have hit if he was immortal, we're going to consider five classic could-have-beens. Number one, what if it were Sandy Koufax surgery? The Dodgers ace retired at age 30, complaining of arthritic pain in the left arm of God. Arthritis, however, is an unusual diagnosis for a young man, even one with 137 career complete games. More likely, modern surgery could have extended Koufax's reign. In fact, Dr. Frank Jobe, the person who invented Tommy John surgery, often lamented later in his life that he didn't discover the procedure 10 years sooner, in time to save Koufax's career. Jobe began working with the Dodgers in 1964, and first performed elbow ligament replacement 10 years later when John was on the Dodgers. John came back and had his best season in his mid-30s and pitched well into his 40s. The idea of Koufax throwing harder in the 1970s instead of golfing is any baseball historian's daydream. Having a surgery named after you, however, is a certain kind of infamy. Tommy John's tremendous career, 288 wins, has become a footnote to his namesake procedure. Young people, like Jack Eichel, see previous issue, don't even know he was a pitcher. The name Tommy John fills fans with dread. The words Sandy Koufax should be revered. What if? Would Bobby Orr topple Gretzky? Wayne Gretzky, the most definite GOAT in sports, to put it in NBA terms, he becomes LeBron James' consistency and longevity with Michael Jordan's dominance and playoff success. Still, people will argue about anything. There are three common contrarian takes on the best hockey player ever. Mario Lemieux, Bobby Orr, or some great goalie, pick your favorite. Lemieux deserves his own what-if. So let's focus on Orr, who, like Koufax, had a dazzling peak before injury forced him out at age 30. He still bowled five of the top 10 scoring seasons by a defenseman ever, including the record 139 points in 1970-71. In comparisons with Gretzky, Orr gets bonus points for being a defenseman. But the difference in literal points between the two players, 1,942, is more than anyone, except obviously Gretzky, has ever scored. The argument for a healthier Orr over Gretzky hinges not on the nature of his injuries, knee-related, but the timing. In 1978-79, when Orr played his last six games, NHL teams averaged 3.50 goals per game. 2 years later, during Gretzky's prime, that number would shoot up to 4.0, a modern record. Maybe in the more freewheeling 1980s, Orr would have enjoyed his best statistical season in his late 30s. Or maybe the rest of the league was simply catching up, and he would have stood out less. Either way, staying healthy on the Bruins in his 30s would have given Orr one surefire way to stand out against Gretzky, a chance to beat him in the Stanley Cup Final. Number 3. Could Mickey Mantle have been better? The knee injury that likely led Mickey Mantle to retire at age 37 wasn't sudden or tragic. In fact, it wasn't even recent. Playing in the 1951 World Series as a rookie, Mantle chased after a Willie Mays fly ball in right field. Afraid to run into legendary center fielder Joe DiMaggio, the 19-year-old pulled up suddenly and his right cleat got stuck in a rubber drain. His knee folded awkwardly and he missed the rest of the series. Historians believe Mantle tore his ACL, MCL, and meniscus, each injury catastrophic by today's standards. Like Koufax's arm, Mantle's knee was failed by the medicine of the day. Instead of surgery, he consistently iced both knees. His left one had its own problems with infections. Still, the Mick managed 536 homers and a .99977 OPS. Imagine him on two good legs. Was Bo Jackson headed to either Hall of Fame? Other Major League Baseball players have been cut in spring training after an off-season injury, but only Royals outfielder Bo Jackson suffered such an injury during an NFL playoff game. A broken hip immediately ended his run with the Raiders. The Royals released him, but the White Sox were willing to wait out his rehab, and he played parts of the 1991 and 93 seasons before retiring after the 1994 strike. The unique nature of his career and how it ended creates a series of what-ifs. Was he destined to be an all-time great in either league? Should he have always been a one-sport athlete? Cooperstown was probably never in the cards. He was a good but one-dimensional hitter. More likely, he could have run his way into Canton, but he had played just 38 NFL games through his age 28 season. Ultimately, Bo was just really, really good at both sports, an unbelievable feat that may never be replicated. Number 5. Was Ken Griffey Jr. going to be the home run king? The back of Ken Griffey Jr.'s baseball card is confusing. The games played column is jagged, but the bottom row shows 630 career home runs. Despite his injuries, the kid had longevity, playing in four different decades. A Sports Illustrated story published after his retirement estimated Griffey lost 1,561 plate appearances due to injury, costing him 353 hits and 92 home runs. That would put him at 722 dingers, 40 shy of Barry Bonds. SI's model, however, attributed Griffey's decline in Cincinnati to age, not injuries. In an era of behemoth bashers, Griffey stood out with his sweet swing. It's tough to say what impact his maladies had on his famous mechanics. Next we have post-ups. Byron Buxton, Minnesota Twin center fielder. Fast facts. Though he has struggled with injuries, Buxton is one of the most exciting players in the league. In just 61 games in 2021, he amassed a WAR of 4.5, hitting 19 homers with an OPS of 1.005. In 2022, he got off to a fast start, homering 11 times in his first 35 games. In 2017, he received the Platinum Glove as the best all-round fielder in the American League. It shows a picture of him on the field leaping for what looks like a great catch. And also here at the bat in the bottom of the page. Then next we have Lamar Jackson. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. "'Out this and nothing more. Ah, with distinguished remember, it was in the blessed December, and comparatively dying ember, lost upon the floor." And so, such is the poem. But Lamar Jackson, let's find out about him. Fast facts. Following the 2021 season, Jackson was named to his second Pro Bowl. In a Week 5 win over the Colts, he completed 37 of 43 passes for a franchise record 442 passing yards as Baltimore overcame a 16-point fourth quarter deficit. Jackson was named MVP in 2019 when he led the Ravens to a 14-2 record. Well, now time for Jurassic Buzz, the Treehouse number 15. Jurassic Buzz. Continue from Treehouse episode number 14, Sportles. Hey, Buzz, apparently you went through a portal that sent you millions of years back in time. I always agreed with you that R&D, research and development, takes things a little too far. He can't hear you sucking up to him, Kip. The portal is unstable, and we can't retrieve Buzz until we can widen it. In the meantime, here's Buzz. Buzz, can you hear us? Then here's a Jurassic animal. Wait, can you wind this thing? Nobody could fit through this portal. Actually, at the aperture's current size, 72% of the members of our staff could be safely rescued. But you boast a 99% out by Trajan breadth. What is he talking about? He said you have a giant head and it can't fit through the hole. Hang tight. Hurry up! My head's about to get a lot smaller. Says the Jurassic animal. Now, they're off. Buzz. Wow. Kids Newsroom. Hey, guys. I think I forgot to carry the one. Next, we're going to Maximum, born to racing parents. Max Verstappen has always been drawn to speed. Now, as Formula One is making a splash in the United States, he's helping draw new fans to the sport. A simple question drew Max Verstappen to racing. How fast can you go? That simple notion of getting behind the wheel of a go-kart and then a car and pushing it as far and as fast as it can go started Verstappen down the road that would see him become the best driver in the world. And he got there quickly, naturally. The speed being low to the ground, really trying to find the limit of the car and also the limit of yourself, the 24-year-old Verstappen says, and of course, the engine, the smell of the fuel, these kinds of things that at the time were very interesting to me as a kid. If anyone was born to race, it was Verstappen. His father, Jos, a former Formula One driver, and his mother, Sophie Kumpen, was an elite go-kart racer. So young Max spent plenty of time around the track, but his parents never pushed him to drive. But when Max, who was born in Belgium but competes for the Netherlands, decided he wanted to get into karting, Josh insisted that he give it his full attention. At the track, if other kids were kicking around a soccer ball, Max would be with his dad, talking about the kart or the track. "I fully understand why," said Verstappen. "You have to have that mentality from a young age to just work harder, because there are a lot of talented kids and drivers in the world who can all do a fast lap. But it's about just going that extra step and saying, how can I be better? How can I beat the other kids?" So young Matt's with Jack Joss's brain while also constantly thinking about how he could improve. It also helped that he had the natural gift necessary to be a great driver. Outstanding reflexes, hand-eye coordination, the ability to focus, and a lack of fear. So here's a picture of Joss on page 36 and 37. National pride. Verstappen became the first Dutch driver to win a Formula One World Drivers' Championship. Under the hood. Note, there is no hood. Picture here of his Formula One car. Halo. The protective halo that surrounds the driver's head was controversial when introduced in 2018, but it showed its worth several times, including in 2021 when it kept one of Verstappen's wheels off of Lewis Hamilton's head during a wreck. Rear wing. Like the front wing, the rear wing adds downforce to the car. The shape of the wing is designed to limit dirty air flowing over the wing. Cleaner air makes it easier for cars in its wake to pass, which leads to more exciting racing. Drag reduction. While creating downforce, the rear wing also slows the car down. At a certain point on the track, a driver can activate the drag reduction system, DRS, which opens up the wing and gives the car a brief added burst of speed. Front wing. Downforce is essential in racing. It keeps the car low to the track, allowing for better handling. The front wing is shaped to create downforce and also improve the car's aerodynamic shape, which lets it cut through the air more easily. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.